Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the Sound. This is Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Thanks for tuning in to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Today, August 31st, is recognized as International Overdose Awareness Day. The world's largest annual campaign to end overdose, remember those we've lost, acknowledge the grief of family and friends left behind, and renew our commitment to end overdose and related harms. So we're reaching out to our expert resources at McCall's Behavioral Health to help us understand how we can address and prevent overdose tragedies in our own family and community. Then we're going to bring back our friends from Girl Scouts of Connecticut. You can learn how this inclusive organization is preparing and empowering the next few generations of female leaders, how you can volunteer as an adult, and get a young woman or girl you care about involved in Girl Scouts. And we're going to close with an important list of back-to-school information featuring tips and advice to help keep all our kids safer as they head into their new school year with our partners from the Red Cross. We'll be back with these conversations and more after we remind you that if you have paints, cleaners, and other chemicals in your home that you need to dispose of, the Naugatuck Valley Council of Governments and participating municipalities are sponsoring a household hazardous waste and paint collection event, Rain or Shine, on Saturday, September 27th. The collection is taking place from 8 to 2 at the Beacon Falls Recreation Complex on Pent Road in Beacon Falls. This is going to be the last event of the year for this organization, and there's no charge to residents. This collection is open to households and Ansonia, Beacon Falls, Bethlehem, Derby, Middlebury, Naugatuck, Oxford, Prospect, Seymour, Southbury, Thomaston, Waterbury, Watertown, Wolcott, and Woodbury. Proof of residency, such as a driver's license, tax bill, or other identification, is required for entry, so get all of your hazardous chemicals, cleaners, paints, and other items together, and come on out on September 27th. All right. Well, if you can depend on the award-winning For the People for anything, it's our ability to build relationships with fantastic resources. And right now, while we're hearing what I hope is a good news in terms of trending regarding fentanyl overdoses, it is still a devastating and drug and a critical issue to talk about. A little over a week ago on August 21st, it was Fentanyl Awareness Day. However, today, as we play this program, it is International Overdose Awareness Day. So we're tapping our partners at McCall's Behavioral Health and bringing a new friend from their organization into ours here, just for your benefit. Kyle Fitzmaurice is here, and he is a harm reduction coordinator for McCall's. So good morning to you, Kyle. How you doing?
Good morning to you, John. I'm doing fabulous.
Fantastic. So let's give folks a quick and brief reminder of what McCall's Behavioral Health Network is and how your role as harm reduction coordinator fits into it.
Oh, gosh. So obviously, you know, it's in the name McCall Behavioral Health Network. We have been growing every pieces that we work with. But I think when it comes down to it, we really center on connection and working alongside and walking alongside people in the community. So in my specific role, there's a few different, you know, pieces or facets that I do, but I think my favorite is that I get to work with people who are using drugs. And, you know, I think in a lot of contexts in the past, we talk about like helping people get into treatment. And while that is definitely something that I'm able to help with, another part of it is just realizing that sometimes people aren't ready for change just yet, and they deserve compassion and care and empathy. So I get to walk alongside people on their journey and support them in whatever, you know, whatever they deem necessary. And along with that, you know, as like the harm reduction coordinator, there's some programmatic stuff that I get to help along with as well.
So not to get into too fine a specific, but can you talk a little bit about the communities from which your client base is coming from to work with you and your team at McCall's?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's kind of interesting. I think, you know, we have this narrative from a few different sources that people who use drugs look one type of way. And if you drink coffee, smoke cigarettes or vape or go to the bar, you use drugs. So I worked with a lot of different communities, and they looked like, you know, such a variety of people. It's hard to narrow it down to one thing. But locally, we work in Litchfield County, and McCall is kind of stretching into Region 5 or Western Connecticut.
Okay, very good. So as we mentioned, Fentanyl Awareness Day was August 21st, and today is International Overdose Awareness Day. The two kind of, unfortunately, sadly, can be talked about, you know, in the same sentence, because fentanyl has played such a huge role in the number of overdoses and sadly the number of overdose deaths that we have suffered here in Connecticut and across the nation for now well over a decade. I guess we hit our high point in 23-24, and we're beginning to start seeing a little bit of downtrending. Is that something you're kind of white knuckling your way through, hoping that it's not just a momentary kind of rollback?
Yeah, I think, you know, kind of harm reductionists in the area are really cognizant of the fact that history repeats itself. And when we think about what happened in the past, you know, as we see these changes and, you know, reductions, we also see, like, you know, we all know, like, there's been a little bit more crackdowns on drugs as of late. And while that feels like it's forward progress, more often than not, when that happens, we see the supply change, which is when it becomes most dangerous. So right now we're seeing a little bit of a lull in overdose deaths, which is really exciting. But I think a large part of that is because of how much work Connecticut has been doing to get the naloxone saturation rate up. So, you know, they, Department of Mental Health and Department of Public Health, you know, they look at our communities and say, you know, there's X amount of community members in the state, and if we could hit this number, I believe it's 80% of witnessed overdoses will have Narcan at it. And in my area, we've been able to hit that. And, you know, I think that's a big part of what we're seeing is documented overdose deaths are not happening as much. That's not to say, though, that overdoses are down. So I think that's where, you know, I love to say prevention looks like nothing's happening. So behind the scenes, you know, it might be a different story. We might be having even more overdoses that we don't see because they're happening in the community and they're being supported by people and, you know, revived by people who are using drugs or who see them and may not be calling 911.
Yeah.
So while overdose deaths are down, which is wonderful, we can't say the same about overdoses, period.
Yeah. Well, we also saw a lot of traction in the latest Connecticut legislative session on these supervised and controlled injection sites, nearly coming to fruition on a pilot basis. No way am I suggesting that McCall's or even you endorse this as a political or public health movement, but that's got to be something that's been on the radar of you and your harm reduction colleagues, essentially since they got introduced and became quite successful in Europe and other countries.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think when we get right down to it, overdose prevention centers save lives, period. You know, and I think when we talk about what's important in this conversation, it's the fact that people are dying. And when we can say, you know, here's the thing that's important, right? It's the fact that we're losing people. And here's this easy solvent that we can do that will, without a doubt, save lives. There's not much more to the conversation, in my opinion, right? We have to preserve human life. And I think it's as easy as that. So, yeah, there's a lot of wonderful things that have come out of overdose prevention centers. That's really exciting. But I know, like, the context of this conversation today is more centered around, like, you know, fentanyl and
right.
Kind of some of that misinformation. But, you know, there is a lot that can happen in our communities
because when people go to these sites with whatever it is they're using, they are offered the opportunity to test the substance right. for fentanyl.
I can say that I encourage your listeners to do some research because it, you know, what feels like it's helping, you know, like this arrest and, you know, punitive measures.
Yeah.
And what we've been told helps isn't always the narrative that is actually true. Mm. And we've just been doing it for so long. It feels like the thing that we should keep doing, but you know, it's been decades of this same thing of arrest and shame and judgment towards people who use drugs. And what we've seen is really no change in the addiction rates across the nation.
Yeah.
And increased overdose deaths. So, you know, overdose prevention centers, they're cost effective. They center on connection and they actually increase access to treatment and care. They already exist, which I think is like something that we have to talk about,
yeah.
right? This isn't, we're not recreating the wheel here.
Sure.
This is stuff that is tried and true and has actually in those communities really helped. And it also reduces, like, you know, public consumption and litter. So,
let's just, by the way, nearly 100% success rate when it comes to preventing overdose deaths, right?
Right. So I personally am not aware of any overdose deaths that have occurred from an OPC. Now, I will say overdoses, I'm sure, happen there.
Sure.
But they're revived because there's people on standby to help.
Yep.
And I think that's the, when it comes down to, like, this conversation, the reason that people are dying in our communities is because typically they're using alone. And that really comes down to shame. We can't talk about the folks that use drugs, right? They don't feel like they can come to their family members or loved ones and say, hey, I'm doing X, Y, and Z, because as a society, we shame that. Mm-hmm. And we look down on and we think of them as less than. And I think, like, you know, even, right, we arrest people who use drugs. And that narrative, that action is saying, hey, when you arrest somebody, right, who do you arrest? You arrest the bad guys.
Right, criminals.
And you arrest criminals. And when we think about why people use drugs, it could be for a variety of reasons. You know, again, kind of how it started. For, you know, alcohol, it's kind of the same concept, right? You might be using drugs at a party. You might be using drugs to have fun.
Or because your doctor told you.
Right. Or you might be using drugs because you have, you know, severe pain.
Yeah.
Or it could be, and I think this is when we start to talk more about substance use disorders, which McCall Behavioral Health Network obviously specializes in,
is
pain and trauma and what happens when we isolate people.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of studies out there that really say that those old methods of arrest and punishment and or even forced treatment do not work. It has to be centered on connection and compassion and really meeting people where they're at.
Yeah. Well, as we cross the midpoint of our conversation here, Kyle, let's get into some of the nuts and bolts of making sure our listeners are as educated as they possibly can be. I know the initial outreach here was over some YouTube videos that onerously suggested that you know, sort of even looking at fentanyl could kill you, basically. And no joking around. So let's get into a very brief kind of a, you know, Sunday morning easy science lesson about what fentanyl is.
sure. So, you know, I think just to start out, fentanyl has been around since around the 60s, and it's still used in medical practices today. It's really common for doctors to, you know, like, use fentanyl for their patients.
Mm.
And so I think that we have this kind of idea where we're, like, demonizing the drug, fentanyl. And I can say without a shadow of a doubt, touching fentanyl, you know, being near fentanyl, you are not at risk of death. If you ingest fentanyl, that might be a different conversation, right? If you, like, use, you know, if you inject it or you, you know, sniff it or, you know, any of those things where it enters your body, you may be at risk of overdose or death. But when you're in the presence of fentanyl, when it's in the room, if there's an open bag of it, if it's on your skin or in your hand, that's not necessarily the case. So, and I think this is where, you know, I've seen a lot of videos where you see, you know, especially first responders, during traffic stops and you see them, what looks like an overdose. And I think when we talk about overdoses, for the folks who might not know, overdose symptoms are blue lips and fingertips. A person might not be responding. They might not be breathing, or it might be a really shallow, ragged breathing. and their pupils are really pinpointed. Mm. And what you see in a lot of these other videos, right, it, when you have like that quote unquote overdose with a first responder, they're talking. More often than not, they're actually asking for Narcan. They're breathing kind of at a different rate than what an overdose would look like. And I don't want to, you know, draw this. This is not to cast judgment or shame or anything like that. But what they're really experiencing is a very human reaction to fear. Mm-hmm. And it's more closely resembles a panic attack. I can definitely outline that. The idea of death is scary. And when you have trusted people anywhere telling you this is what happens when you touch fentanyl or that you're near it, the brain is always more powerful than the body. And when you believe something wholeheartedly, your body is going to react to it. So this isn't a willpower thing. This isn't, you know, like they're not, I don't believe that they're faking it. They're truly terrified and they think that they need Narcan.
Right.
Go ahead.
I was just saying, individuals like you, professionals in the harm reduction field, certainly are doing hard and great work. But your team at McCall has really stepped up to a new level here with this Community and Law Enforcement for Addiction Recovery Initiative.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that's where I started. I was actually one of the community engagement specialists, and I kind of moved into this role as a harm reduction coordinator. And I worked really closely with that team, and mm-hmm. they're absolutely wonderful. And I think, you know, that partnership with our law enforcement is just, it's so wonderful because you get to have these conversations, right? And I think that the importance of this conversation is that when we have this fear about people who use drugs, people are less likely to render aid. And when you see someone overdosing, you might have that fear of, you know, if I touch them, I might overdose. And that's just not true. But when that happens, people might not, you know, receive the care or help that they deserve. And we may lose people because of it. So That's a really big point of this conversation today is to say, hey, you know, it's not true. Being in the room, touching fentanyl, it's not going to cause an overdose.
And this peer-to-peer reinforcement is critical because, as folks know, even from listening to guests on this program, firefighters that are now inducted into the EMS world and are typically responding along with ambulances to medical emergencies, they're kind of within their own social circle. Obviously, law enforcement, police officers and such also have their own really strong and reinforcing circles of influence, as do emergency medical professionals. And to be able to develop a video and a program that provides this sort of a peer looking the other peer in the eye and saying, giving them the facts about fentanyl is critical.
Absolutely. Yeah, I completely agree. And I think that's what, you know, like has been so wonderful about programs like this is that we get to partner with those folks and connect and have like real honest conversations. Mm.
So here we are, moving toward the end of our conversation on Overdose Awareness Day. Let's just get into some numbers, both at the national level and then zeroing into Connecticut. Let's talk about these trends that we're starting to hear about, these rollbacks. How many people have actually died from overdoses in the last measured year?
Yeah, so last year in Connecticut, we lost almost 1,000 people. Our state is small, and maybe to some, they might say that 1,000 feels like a relatively low number. But what I think about when I hear any number related to overdose deaths is how many loved ones or family members or friends are attached to that single loss. You know, and we're talking about like high thousands, right? That really changes things. So I think when we talk about overdose deaths, it's hard to capture the amount of people who are affected by it.
Mm-hmm. So what can you share in terms of numbers looking here in Connecticut?
Yeah, so about 1,000 people died last year in Connecticut. And if you go on like the DPH website, there's a link you can follow that will bring you to like what drugs were related to those deaths.
Yeah.
And what I think is really important to note is that I want to touch just briefly on the iron law of prohibition. And basically the concept, if you've ever seen like, you know, or seen or read the book, The Great Gatsby, it's kind of the same idea, right? 1920s prohibition, they said alcohol is illegal. And you know, what happened was really moonshining, right? People didn't stop using alcohol. It just became unregulated.
Yeah, bathtub gin,
Right. And it also became, it became stronger, right? It was really beer and wine predominantly before that.
And then
prohibition happened, and then it was stronger. So we're seeing the same thing when it comes to opiates. You know, it was heroin. There was it was opium, crackdowns on opium, and then it went to heroin, right? And then it went from heroin to fentanyl, from fentanyl to nitazenes and carfentanil, and it continues to get smaller and stronger as we crack down on the one before it. And we talked about this concept of the war on drugs, but we can't wage war on inanimate objects. It's the people who suffer when we wage war on an inanimate object. So when we talk about, you know, the war on drugs, it's a war on people who use drugs more than it is the war on like a specific drug. Mm. If that makes any sense.
And it needs to be the war against the people who make the drugs, which is becoming part of the problem when we're looking at 8 out of 10 related overdose deaths last year being tied to fentanyl in some way, shape, or form. The most insidious is the counterfeit pills. And I'm sorry we only have a couple more minutes to talk about this, but maybe it's a great way to end the conversation for now, Kyle. What are you seeing on the front line, and what is your team seeing in terms of the proportion of people, especially young people, who are, taking the one time or the occasional intake of what they think is a drug that may help them or make them feel good, for a few hours or a little bit of time, and they end up dead.
Yeah. So I think I can start by saying, we're not going to really see a change until we see regulation. Crackdowns like this continue to, change the supply and cause things like this to happen. So until we can see drugs, just like alcohol, become regulated, right? I can go to the store and I can buy a 5% beer, and I know that beer is 5% every single time. Until that can happen, we're going to continue to see stuff like this happen. But I think when it comes down to it, right, millennia, drug use has been part of culture, and it's not going to go anywhere, right? We can't hit the delete button on addiction or drug use. So what we have to do is conceptually understand that until we can see regulation or change on that level happen, people who are using drugs, even if it's pressed pills or, whatever it is from the street, they need to have access to testing them and making sure they're safe. So fentanyl test strips, things like that go a really long way in making sure that people know what they're using. Kind of going back to the website, the DPH thing that I was sharing about, you can see it's there's 1,000 people about who passed away, but the amount of substances attached to it are like much, much higher. And it's because it's not just one drug in the supply when someone passes away. It's called polysubstance use. People are mixing, maybe packing on the same table, whatever it is, but there's more than one thing in the supply right now. And maybe I can end on kind of one of my favorite analogies when it comes to Narcan, if that works for you.
Yeah, sure.
So I love it when people talk about Narcan, and sometimes you hear this idea that maybe people like made that choice to use drugs and they shouldn't receive it. And I would challenge that if you were on a boat and the boat was starting to sink, right? Someone should probably throw you a life raft. But you made that decision to get on the boat.
Yeah.
You still deserve to live just because you got on the boat. And I think that's when we talk about Narcan is the life raft. Regardless of the decision, we need to prioritize human life before anything else. And Narcan, it's never dangerous, and it is proven to save countless lives. So if we're talking about fentanyl, if we're talking about opiates, if we're talking about drug use, Narcan, naloxone, it has to be part of the conversation, because that's how we see overdose deaths decrease, along with policy change.
And a great way to end the conversation here on International Overdose Awareness Day with Kyle Fitzmaurice, our newest partner in health. He's a harm reduction specialist with McCall Behavioral Health Network. They specialize in helping individuals heal from substance use disorders, mental health disorders, or both. They focus on a person's emotional and behavioral health together to build a strong and more resilient community throughout Connecticut. Kyle, we thank you so much. Folks, if you want to learn more about this organization or avail yourself or someone you love of their services, it's McCallBHN.org. That's McCall with two C's, two L's, BHN.org. Kyle, great to meet you and look forward to learning more from you again. Well, check this out, a pumpkin catapult challenge, a STEM-infused weekend at Sikorsky, and overnight camping at Hammonasset State Park. Each of these exciting activities is designed to reflect the diversity of interests from girls across the state, from the preeminent leadership development organization, Girl Scouts of Connecticut. The statewide council recently launched a power-packed roster of activities to recruit new members and adult volunteers throughout September, and just in time for the start of the nonprofit's next membership year that begins October 1st. So we've called out to our network of experts and friends within Girl Scouts of Connecticut and are pleased to welcome Christy King to the program. She's Chief Membership and Impact Officer at Girl Scouts of Connecticut. Christy, how you doing?
I'm doing well, John. Thank you for having me on.
Excellent. Let me get into the conversation with you in just a moment. I just want to remind people that now is the time to gather a team of four and get ready for an afternoon of friendly competition for a great cause. The Ruth's House Bowl-a-thon is rolling into Fairfield on Saturday, November 1st at 1 p.m. at Nutmeg Bowl. This first ever bowl-a-thon for this nonprofit is featuring pizza, great friends, new opportunities for single moms in our communities, and the cost of admission is simple. Each player is responsible for raising or contributing at least $100 to support Ruth's House, which is providing an empowering home, holistic support, life skills, education, and encouragement for single mothers and their children. To learn more, visit RuthsHouseCT.com. And speaking of helping young ladies and folks in the adult world to get involved in making the best of our young women here in Connecticut, yes, we are pleased to have Christy King on the program from Girl Scouts of Connecticut. So, Christy, what's your Girl Scout history story?
Yeah, thanks for asking, John. So I was a Girl Scout as a child, as so many of the women are in Connecticut. One of six women have been Girl Scouts at some point in their lifetime. And so I was a Girl Scout. My mother was my troop leader. And I became a Girl Scout adult when my sister, you know, very kindly provided me with four nieces, and they are all Girl Scouts. And she brought me in as a volunteer, and I've been a longtime volunteer with their troops and became involved with Girl Scouts of Connecticut, first as a volunteer helping out with council activities, and now as a staff member. My role now is Chief Membership and Impact Officer, and so I get to spend every day really thinking about how to support our girls and young women, how to support our adult volunteers and their families, and really build a community that supports and empowers, you know, everyone who is looking to, you know, learn and grow with Girl Scouts.
Yeah, and if you want to get some idea of the scope and size of this organization and its corresponding impact, Christy, you're one of around 9,000 adults that's involved in Girl Scouts of Connecticut right here in our small state, serving almost 20,000 girls in a typical year. This organization's been around for well over a century.
Yeah, that's correct. So founded in 1912, we've been building girls of courage, confidence, and character who make the world a better place for over 100 years now. We have two service centers in Connecticut and four retail shops. We also have five summer camps, and those properties operate year-round, as well as one overnight summer camp program. So we're across the state serving girls in every community, and really focusing on creating that safe space for girls to be themselves, to find their voice and make changes that affect issues most important to them.
Yeah, and this certainly, you know, it's not our grandma's Girl Scouts. It's probably not even close to resembling our mom's Girl Scouts. You guys have really come far, especially when you talk about the operation of retail shops and getting young people interested in all aspects and facets of the business world, from product marketing, development, retail, I'm sorry, merchandising, and all of the related education that comes with running a business.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things that I find most exciting is that Girl Scouts is such a modern and relevant and engaging organization. You know, there's certainly a lot of history and traditions that we're so proud of our legacy, but we're meeting our modern girls and our modern, you know, youth members where they are, and really giving them experiences that are expanded and fit the needs of modern life and the modern workforce. So our foundation centers around four pillars. Entrepreneurship, as you mentioned, you know, our Girl Scouts participate in badge activities, but also our very popular cookie sales program and our fall product sales program. So they're building those connections with small businesses. They're learning how to create and manage budgets, enhancing their communication skills, building social media savvy, and just developing that entrepreneurial spirit. But our other pillars are STEAM, life skills, and the outdoors. And we have a range of activities that focus on all of those areas. So our STEAM events offer girls a chance to learn how to code video games or build robots or, you know, build catapults to launch pumpkins and have a competition in the fall. So there are a lot of things that really spark their interest, but are preparing them for the modern day workforce and just modern day living.
Yeah, Girl Scouts are a great conduit for young women who are woefully underrepresented, but a growing population in the world of STEM and STEAM fields.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And one of the things that really is so exciting is that because our program runs from kindergarten all the way up through 12th grade for our youth members, there are activities and opportunities at every level that really meet them in their development and growth. So our younger girls are earning badges and exploring their curiosity and making friends and building a community. But the opportunities for our older Girl Scouts really are, you know, the pathway to success wherever their interests are taking them in college and beyond. Yeah. Those positive benefits are things that they carry with them as they move into the next chapter of life. And we see that with our highest awards. The girls have the opportunity to earn their bronze, silver, or gold award. And that's through community service projects that really are aimed at making a positive impact in their communities.
Yeah.
And it's sometimes leading to scholarships and opportunities in the workforce later on. And it's exciting to think that Girl Scouts is really that pathway to progression for all the way from K through 12 and into their adulthood.
Yeah. And the life skills and the outdoor skills really kind of sometimes go together, because the outdoor skills are more than just, you know, having a great time around the campfire. They are really team building and life skill empowering opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have those year-round opportunities to, you know, first foster our Girl Scouts' love of nature, but to build outdoor skills and also build confidence. When you learn how to, you know, successfully start a campfire or pitch a tent, or you're trying, you know, activities like swimming or boating that maybe you don't have access to in other areas of your life, these are unique experiences that our summer camp programs and our family overnights offer year-round. And those life skill programs that you mentioned, there's civic engagement opportunities and governance activities available to our Girl Scouts, as well as things like healthy living and wellness and, you know, positive self-esteem and how to build healthy relationships. And those are things that are so important for our Girl Scouts at every age.
Yeah. Nothing like wrapping a line around a tree and rappelling down a cliff to make a young woman or a teen more empowered and brave in their everyday life. It really brings great perspective. And one of of the many opportunities for folks to get to know Girl Scouts of Connecticut are happening throughout the rest of the month of September ahead of your October 1st program official start. Let's talk about some of these exciting recruiting events that are coming up for youth members and adult volunteers as well.
You know, we have an incredibly packed calendar of activities this fall. We're excited to really jump into September and back to school. For those adult volunteers, we're hosting volunteer kickoff events across the state. We began last week with three events that were on the western half of the state and are continuing next week with an event that will be happening in Glastonbury on September 4th and in Waterford on September 6th. And those kickoff events are really targeted for our volunteers to come and connect with council staff to discover exciting changes to our programs and activities for this membership year, to learn more about those highest awards and fall product sales that is, you know, coming up in our calendar very soon. And so we're excited to be really, you know, meeting with our volunteers and our families where they are. Mm-hmm. But we have a range of exciting girl programs that are available both to our current members, but also those who are interested in learning more about Girl Scouts and learning about what Girl Scouts do. So some of those are outdoor themed. We have a Sky's the Limit hiking challenge where our members can explore 15 designated state parks and forests and really get out in nature. But you mentioned at the top that we have that family overnight camp out coming up at Hammonasset Beach State Park. Mm. That's happening September 13th and 14th. And it's a chance for our Girl Scouts and their families to really get out in nature, to learn new skills, to explore Hammonasset's beautiful park trails or participate in stargazing on the beach. It's a really nice way to wrap up the summer season and get outdoors.
Sure. And talk about bringing Girl Scouts to where people live. You also are offering an urban hiking experience.
Yes. And for those who aren't fans of the woods, but really want to get outside and get some exercise or just explore a local town, we do have some exciting urban hikes on the calendar. And those are just things that really are on the outdoor side. We have some exciting, I'll say, indoor activities. Yes. With our paper engineering program that's happening this fall. There are dates throughout September and October and beyond for those engineering challenge events that we're offering. We also have an exciting EcoBots program coming where technology really meets sustainability, and our girls will have a chance to design and program simple robots to solve an environmental challenge, such as, you know, cleaning up an oil spill or sorting recyclables.
Sure,
so they'll have an opportunity for teamwork and innovation, but really focus on those STEM skills that are important.
Yeah, and aligning with other great female leaders. I'm talking about our beloved Connecticut Sun basketball team.
Yes. So we have our Connecticut Day at the Sun happening this Monday, September 1st, and we'll be able to really engage with some of the Connecticut Sun athletes who will be there available with a special behind-the-scenes experiences post-game. Our Girl Scouts and families who attend will be cheering on the Connecticut Sun during their game. And really, it's highlighting that, you know, whether it's through Girl Scouts, whether it's through sports, there are so many ways to lead with courage and confidence.
Yeah. To our youngest potential Girl Scouts, you offer something called Daisy Days.
We do. So these are fun events that are really designed for those youngest members or potential members in kindergarten and first grade. That program level is called Daisies. And it's a chance for them to be introduced to the organization, to get outside. There are outdoor components for those Daisy Days programs. And so our attendees will be able to learn about Girl Scouts, but also make new friends, participate in some hands-on learning experiences, and for their families really to discover the benefits available to both the youth and their families.
Yeah. And as we mentioned, getting potential members into the real world of STEM experience. There's also an overnight camp at Sikorsky, the Lockheed Martin company down here in Stratford, Shelton area. And I'd be remiss in not making sure my friends, the Francis family at Quasi Amusement and Water Park, don't get a shout out, because they're great friends of Girl Scouts of Connecticut as well.
They are. We're so excited about both of these programs. They're happening at the end of September, and that overnight at Camp Sikorsky is one of our flagship programs. We've been hosting it for many years in conjunction with our friends at Sikorsky, and that's a high-energy, hands-on overnight weekend. The girls will get the chance to dive into real-world STEM experiences. They'll have a night of tent camping, but also get to explore engineering and aviation and emergency response alongside Sikorsky aircraft engineers and executives. And then we're wrapping up September on September 28th with our Girl Scout Day at Quasi Amusement and Water Park. So we're ending our 2025 Girl Scout year with just a real splash of excitement and celebration. So Girl Scouts and their families are welcome to join us for that. And it's a day of unlimited rides and picnic fare and a chance to connect with other Girl Scouts, but also council staff who will be there.
Great. Well, we've squeezed it down to the last 30 seconds to let everybody know how to get involved.
Yeah, so for details on any of our upcoming Girl Scout events, you can visit our website at gsofct.org. Or if you're interested in becoming a member or possibly a Girl Scout volunteer, I encourage everyone to contact our customer service team at 1-800-922-2770 or by email at customercare@gsofct.org.
Christy King with us here, representing the preeminent leadership development organizations for girls right here in Connecticut. Girl Scouts of Connecticut, gsofct.org is their website. We hope you'll look them up and get a young woman or a girl that you know involved in Girl Scouting. Or if you're an adult and you'd like to give back, learn all of the many ways that you can be a fantastic mentor through an established organization with a track record of great success. Christy, thank you. Well, as we mentioned in our introduction, we are welcoming back our partners with American Red Cross of Connecticut and Rhode Island and a brand new voice from that organization here on the award-winning For the People. I'm really pleased to meet Jasmine Frangel, who is with the Red Cross office here in Connecticut. And we're going to get into a discussion about back-to-school safety, whether you're out on the road encountering buses, cars, other vehicles, cyclists or pedestrians involved in heading back to school, or if you are a student or your child is a student who is going to be riding or biking or walking to school. We've got some really important information for you. But first, we've got some important information for businesses and entrepreneurs in the greater Naugatuck Valley. Schmooza Palooza is back, and it's going to be happening on Wednesday, October 29th from 2 to 5 at the Trumbull Marriott with lots of opportunities to network. Brought to you in partnership by the Greater Valley Chamber of Commerce, the Bridgeport Regional Business Council, and Monroe Chamber of Commerce, Schmooza Palooza is all about business and action and making connections. This is a premier tabletop trade show highlighting some of the best from the greater Bridgeport, Monroe, and Naugatuck Valley region, and local businesses across every industry will be showcasing their must-have products and services. And for an additional treat or treats, attendees can indulge in eats and treats all around the exhibit hall. So if you're a food service member, a business owner, or an eligible entrepreneur in those areas, just learn more now and register under the featured event tab at greatervalleychamber.com. All right, from Schmoozapalooza to back to school safety, Jasmine Frangel is with us from the American Red Cross office serving Connecticut and Rhode Island. Jasmine, thank you again for coming on the program this morning.
Thank you so much for having me, John.
So we're going to be addressing drivers and vehicle operators out on the road who are really kind of the make up 50% of the reason why we're here talking this morning. It's back to school time. I know you have some reminders specifically for folks who are out sharing the road with our buses and young people going back to school.
Yeah, absolutely. And it really just starts with two simple words, slow down. we understand that, you know, sometimes you have to get to work and, you know, you're going somewhere and it could be tempting to speed on the highways. But, you know, now that we're back to school, we really want, we encourage drivers to slow down. Motorists should also stop when they are behind a bus, meeting the bus, or approaching an intersection where a bus is stopped. They should follow the signs, and you know, that's really, really important for the students who are getting on and off the bus. And also, you know, respect any physical barriers that are out on the roads as it relates to bus safety. And don't proceed until all the children that are coming off and on often on the buses have reached their place of safety. So we really just want drivers to be aware that buses are on the road. There are students out, you know, on the sidewalks and getting on and off the bus. And it's just important to just be mindful and slow down.
Jasmine, I worry so much about the youngest students and the youngest drivers at the same time, because you know, this is the school year where a lot of you know, 16 and 17 year olds are driving to school for the first time, but by the same token, the littlest ones that are really, really excited every day when that bus pulls up, you know, you don't want to be passing that bus when the yellow lights are on but the red flag has not gone out yet, because you never know when the little one's going to just be so excited, they're going to run right out as soon as they see the bus. So as soon as those bus lights are activated, that means no passing on either side, right?
Right. Correct. As soon as you see those lights pull up, you know, sometimes it could be a little frustrating, but, you know, as it could hold up a little bit of traffic, but, you know, they do that for a reason. And as soon as you see those lights, you should absolutely stop. And, you know, make sure you look before you start driving when it, you know, goes off, to make sure that those little kids are not anywhere in the vicinity, and proceed with caution.
Great. Now let's switch gears to the parents, caregivers, grandparents, and the little kids themselves. If the younger mm-hmm. students are going to school for the first time, what are a few of the most important things to teach them?
Yeah, so we think that, you know, for the little kids that are going to school for the first time, we want parents to make sure that their little ones know their phone number, their address, how to get in touch with their parents at work, how to get in touch with another trusted adult, and, of course, how to dial 911. Of course, we want to remind our little ones that they should never talk to strangers or accept rides from someone they don't know. Also, we want parents who may be having their child walk to school for the first time to remind them that walking on the sidewalk, they should walk, not run. And if no sidewalk should be available, they should walk facing the traffic, not against the traffic. Also, the stop and look left and right before crossing the street is really, really important. I know it may sound a little redundant, but that's like the most important thing, is just we want the kids to be safe, have patience, and make sure they stop, look left and right, look again, and then cross the road if they see no cars coming. We have to remind them all the time and kind of ingrain it in their heads, you know, when they're walking to school. Mm-hmm. They should never run out into the street or cross between parked cars. And they should cross the street at the corner, obey traffic signals, and stay in the crosswalks. So we just want to just make sure that they follow the rules so that they can be safe.
There's also a lot of important things to remember, like we already started talking about, when it comes to riding the school bus, especially either at the beginning of the school year when that kind of muscle memory may have faded over the summer, but especially mm-hmm. for the first timers on the school bus, no matter what grade you're in, right?
Right, absolutely. These rules, these safety notes apply to all kids, whether you're in elementary school or in high school. I mean, it pretty much applies to all students. And it's important for parents to remind students that it's important to get to their bus stop early. as well. I mean, I know, it's, you know, sometimes we're running a little bit late, but getting to the bus stop early is important so that when the bus comes, you can see it, you know, as it arrives, and you're not kind of just like running out in front of it. Also board the bus only after it has come to a complete stop, and make sure that the driver attendant wait for their instructions to get on and off, and only board their bus. Never board a bus that you don't recognize. And if you have any questions, contact your your school district to confirm if there is a different bus. That's very important as well.
And in regards to the getting out there early, the another important reason for that is so that you can efficiently and quickly board the bus when you're instructed to, when it pulls up and activates its safety signals and stop, because that will probably reduce the likelihood that impatient drivers that might be in front of or behind the bus will want to try to illegally pass that bus. So it's the riders that play an important role in keeping everyone safer. So getting to the bus stop early is really a critically important thing.
Absolutely. It allows for time for, you know, to line up. And, you know, as you said, lets the other impatient drivers know that, you know, that there are kids getting on a school bus and that they should stop and heed the stop.
Yeah. A lot of kids are now riding their bikes and e-bikes to school. I know you have a couple points for them, as well as teenagers driving to school.
Yes. So for our little ones that are riding their bikes to school, parents, you are brave. We just want to remind your children to always wear a helmet. Of course, it's so important. Never leave home and ride a bike without wearing a helmet. And always try to ride on the right in the same direction as the traffic is going. That's so that, you know, the traffic can see your little one, you know, as they're in the same direction as they're going to school.
Mm-hmm.
Also, if you were, you know, if you're driving your child to school, always wear your seatbelt. We just want to remind all parents that wearing your seatbelt, wearing your kid's seatbelt, even if it's for a 5-minute ride, always wear your seatbelt. Younger children should also be using their car seat or booster seat until the lap shoulder belt fits properly, which is typically for children ages 8 to 12 and over just under 5 feet. So they should also ride in the back seat until they are at least 13 years old. So that's just a reminder for those that are driving their kids to school as well. And if you have a teenager that is driving to school, again, very brave parents, make sure you remind your teenager of pretty much the same thing. So use their seatbelt, even if it's a 5-minute ride, make sure they are putting on that seatbelt when they're going and coming back home. Also, do not use your cell phone to text or make calls, and avoid eating or drinking while driving. So the same rules that apply to us apply to them. No texting, using your phone, no eating or drinking or driving, drinking or eating while driving. So that's for our teenagers who are on the road getting to school.
Great. All important critical advice for back to school from our friends at American Red Cross of Connecticut and Rhode Island. Jasmine Franjul has been helping us with these reminders today. And speaking of cell phones, hey, if you are considering getting your student a cell phone, the best app you could probably download is the Red Cross First Aid and Emergency app to give them access to first aid tips for common emergencies. And weather alerts, real-time weather alerts, always important. So don't forget to download that Red Cross First Aid and Emergency apps to anybody's mobile phones, no matter what age they're carrying those phones to school. Jasmine, thank you so much for your time this morning. Is there a website people can go to check more of this information and to learn more about the apps?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, as you said, they can download the free Red Cross First Aid and Emergency app through the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store, or they could just visit our website at redcross.org.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a PSA for our program that's relevant to the audiences and communities we serve, you must make your request for consideration in writing via email to john.vocat@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program can be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station websites. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Vocat. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime. Just find it under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.
Hey, Central Ohio. The nationwide Children's Marathon will be taking over the city on October 18th and 19th. COTA riders can expect significant reroutes throughout the city. Operators will be working tirelessly to assist COTA customers. That's October 18th and 19th for the nationwide Children's Marathon. Expect significant reroutes downtown. You can view real-time updates on the transit app or at COTA.com. That's COTA.com. Good luck to all the runners.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.